back, folks. Second hour of War Room Live is on. Let's go ahead and go to this video, because I saw it bopping around the internet right before going live. I haven't even watched it myself yet. I thought it was ridiculous, but then I saw more people posting it. Let's go. Clip 83. This is famed, I'm pretty sure famed fraudulent psychic Uri Geller, allegedly, I'll say. But I'm, this is the same guy I'm thinking it is. He was very much humiliated by whoever that guy is that would routinely, like, am I wrong? Is Uri Geller, the guy, he used to go on late night shows and he would, like, make a pencil move with his mind and it amazed everybody. And then Randy, the amazing Randy, I think his name is, right, would go and just, he would just hold a piece of paper in front of Uri's mouth. Suddenly the pencil wouldn't move because he figured out he was just lightly blowing the pencil and making it spin. Is that Uri Geller? I'm pretty sure that's who it is, right? So here he is on Channel 14, which is closely associated with Benjamin Netanyahu. It's an Israeli channel. Here's what he had to say about what he believes is happening with Donald Trump. He says he changed his position. It's not exactly telepathic powers, but electromagnetic powers. The Russians have it, the Koreans have it, and the Iranians have it. I know it. I know it sounds like I took it from some fictional movie, but it's really what's happening on the job now. They're working with this weapon, and in my opinion, they've injected these waves into the brain. I don't exactly know. It could even be in Russia, where when he was in Russia, it's very easy, even from the routines in Washington. Sorry, China. They hit him in China. They can see this weapon from the routines in Washington. So, Uri, why don't you activate your telepathic weapon, your electromagnetic weapon, to rebalance it? He says, believe it or not, they asked me to do it, and I'm working on it, and I'm working on it. He asked me to share with you where the request came from. Yes, there are things that I can't reveal. I'm sorry, but I cannot reveal the telepathic weaponry we are deploying. It's all very sophisticated. I'm so sorry. He said, do you think this electromagnetic weapon is being wielded on Witkoff? Look, it could be related to finances, Qatar. He says, I'm actually angry. I went on my networks. How can Donald Trump receive a 747 as a gift? Really? Okay, he's getting into other stuff. All right, so that's Uri Geller. Okay, Israeli state-adjacent TV found the explanation for why Trump signed the Iran deal, and it's not the $300 billion reconstruction fund or the gas prices or the 37% approval rating. It's Iranian electromagnetic brainwave weapon. They got him. How did he let his guard down like this? They got him with the Jewish space lasers, only they're not Jewish, and they're not in space, and they might not be lasers. The psychic weapon. I think we have an answer here. I know what you've probably heard from the likes of people like me was that this memorandum of understanding was a necessary step because of the economic reality, the Strait of Hormuz being closed, causing shortages, starting a feedback loop of economic downturn. I know you may be thinking this has to do with something about the Iranian ability to fight back incursions and America and Israel's inability to wield any effective leverage against them. You might think for a moment, if you're an idiot, that there are some real tangible, real world situations that, you know, require appropriate responses. But no. See, you're an idiot. They're telling the truth on the Israeli television. It's a psychic weapon that the Chinese hit him with. It's an electromagnetic weapon that they hit Trump with. That totally changed his mind. How did we ever let this happen? Thank God. Thank goodness. We've got Jewish mystic Uri Geller, who's operating his own electromagnetic operation. There's a war going on inside Donald Trump's head as multiple factions around the world beam contradictory thoughts into his head in an effort to rescue their country from the abyss. Really incredible stuff. Thank you, Uri Geller, for that very truthful statement.
Thanks for- for having me. Before I start, wanted to pitch a couple of the products there for the listeners. The bovine colostrum has been fantastic. My mom had tremendous results, similar to the results your mom had with her hair and skin. Methylene blue, the mental clarity, the focus has been amazing. I just found that I just needed to up the dose a little bit from the recommendation, and then that really hit. So definitely helps to support the broadcast. Alex, the reason you're so successful and the reason so many people chime in is because you have the best guests. That does include Victor Boot, but I will reference the legendary Gerald Celente. What does he say time after time? When there's nothing left, they take us to war.
The bovine colostrum is incredible. The methylene blue, you fund us. You're our funders, not the Israelis or the Muslims or the Russians or the U.S. government. You fund us at thealexjonesstore.com. And the new news site for all the feeds and articles is alexjoneslive.com. And on Rumble, rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShowLive. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. AlexJonesLive.com is the URL, AlexJonesLive.com. Tell your friends and family, still people out there that don't know that we are still on air, still fighting the fight, as big as ever, because we brought in a bunch of new audience, but still there are people out there that they go to InfoWars.com, they see it's down, and that's it for them. They need to know. They need to be told. You need to do it. Again, I was explaining this before, and my dad was asking me about, like, well, why don't you, like, do a big thing on X? And it's like, well, a lot of people don't have X. A lot of people, like, if they were on X, they'd probably know where to find us. So, seriously, as an act of, you know, community involvement, you can go to all of your older neighbors, say, if you're a fan of Alex Jones, you know he's still on the air, right? AlexJonesLive.com. Of course, support us at TheAlexJonesStore.com. And by the way, I plugged the store earlier. I didn't even mention probably the coolest hat we've ever had on the store. This 1776 hat, I think, is the coolest hat we've ever had. It's a little bit big. It's Alex sized right here. Let me decrease it quite a bit for my smaller brain mass here. I mean, that is a cool hat. That is a very cool hat. That's all I have to say. It's like, you know, when it comes to supplements, I can tell you about all the cool stuff. Obviously, this is going to be made with the best, you know, material available. It's going to last a long time. It's actually stitched in here. You can actually see the very fine stitching on here. It's not just something ironed on or anything. I mean, this is not going anywhere. But yeah, all I really have to say is look how cool it is. And it's available at thealexjonesstore.com. I'm serious. I genuinely think this is the coolest hat we've ever come out with, hands down. So I'm going to take this one home. Personally, I'm going to take this one home. You can get yours at thealexjonesstore.com. The one that's here is going to disappear from the office mysteriously, and it's going to be in my closet. But you have to go to thealexjonesstore.com to get yours, thealexjonesstore.com. It is a really fantastic hat. I forgot to mention earlier. Okay. With that, let's get back to the videos and the discussion of the MOU and the peace agreement that is forthcoming. We're sure it's coming. I mean, after all, there has been encouraging progress. That's the quote, U.S.-Iran talks. But, you know, tension does remain. U.S.-Iranian officials made encouraging progress at the first round of talks in Switzerland that ended early on Monday, mediators said. Although tension persisted over Lebanon and the Strait of Hormuz, mediators Pakistan and Qatar said the parties had agreed to a roadmap towards a final deal on ending their war in 60 days, despite a tense start as Tehran again shut down the strait and U.S. President Donald Trump threatened to resume attacks on Iran. They said the two sides had agreed to a mechanism to end fighting between U.S. ally Israel and Iran aligned Hezbollah militants in Lebanon. This is all nonsense. They're working out a mechanism to, no, it's just, you just leave. You have to leave now. Israel has to leave Lebanon now. That's the mechanism that's necessary to stop the fighting. It's that you have to stop invading their country and they'll stop fighting you from invading their country. That's the mechanism that needs to be invented, I believe. But of course, a large part of this that's getting a lot of ire from the Israel First side of things is, of course, the $300 billion price tag that will apparently be tacked onto this. But just like the billions of dollars freed by Barack Obama to Israel. This is not being interpreted the correct way by the wider population. So I do want to go now to clip number 51. We'll start at 2 minutes and 30 seconds in. This is, and I'm sorry, not sure how to pronounce this guy's name, but I do like him a lot. Trita Parsi. I believe he was on with Tucker Carlson at one point, but here he is on CNN explaining the reality behind the billions of dollars being opened up as a possibility from this MOU. Let's watch.
Let's continue the conversation now over the past many years.
Absolutely.
I'm curious your perspective on this, though, because CNN had some new reporting that Qatar is looking to get payments to Iran, potentially as much as unfreezing $6 billion in Iranian funds. Even if it isn't the U.S. paying the money effectively, is it effectively paying off Iran to try and get closer to peace?
Well, of course it is, because that's what these freezing of funds were supposed to be. It seems like in Washington, people have forgotten what the actual objective with freezing these funds was. It was to pressure the Iranians to come and negotiate and give nuclear concessions. And if they did so, the money that is theirs would be returned to them. So this is the same criticism that was leveled against the Obama administration. They unfroze a significant amount of Iranian money as part of the JCPOA. Of course, it was phased, and this one will be phased as well. But this is the difference between some people in Washington thinking that the sanctions are there for the sake of just punishing the country indefinitely, and those who recognize that this was supposed to be leverage. And the very point with leverage is that at the right time, you're supposed to lift it in order to get concessions from the other side.
Trudeau, real quickly, I don't have a ton of time left, but I just wanted to get your perspective on this, because when it comes to this MOU, this Memorandum of Understanding, you wrote this week that, quote, the criticism coming from some Democrats is particularly disappointing because it echoes the same bad faith tactics Republicans deployed against the JCPOA back in 2015. I just wanted your perspective. What did you mean by that, that you're seeing shades of that again?
We're seeing a very knee-jerk reaction by some Democrats, not by all, of course, that is putting forward, frankly, some bad faith critiques of this deal. First of all, we don't know what the final deal is. This is just a memorandum that sets the parameters. There's been a lot of critique against, for instance, the $300 billion reconstruction fund. Forgetting the fact that this is not American money, but rather as part of a final deal in which the Iranians give massive nuclear concessions, the United States would lift sanctions that would enable the Iranians to rebuild their economy. And this is particularly driven by some of Iran's neighbors, the GCC countries, who have recognized the containment and isolation of Iran does not work. It just leads to this disastrous war. And as a result, they want to create economic interdependence with Iran, similarly to what the Europeans did after the Second World War, in order to make sure they never have that war again. And that's the direction the region is going. That's good for the U.S. That would lead to a more stable Middle East. Mm. And to critique that, I think, is one of these bad faith type of attacks that we also saw the Republicans constantly do against the JCPOA 10 or so years ago.
All right. Well, a lot of moving parts. And again, all eyes on Switzerland now for this particular weekend. Trita Parsi, thank you so much for sharing your expertise.
Thanks so much for having me.
So again, I think that was an important point. And ever since I heard that, I just keep thinking, well, yeah, that is why sanctions exist, isn't it? They aren't supposed to exist forever. They're supposed to compel behavior. And then you release the sanctions as reward for good behavior. Of course, it gets even more complicated when it's like Iranians have money in banks that we then seize, or crypto wallets that they're able to seize that way. It is their money at the end of the day. We've taken it in order to compel their behavior. But once again, I think, what we're seeing is when the rubber hits the road, all of the rhetoric, all of the sophisticated strategies of monetary manipulation and economic warfare, none of them hold a candle to a gigantic missile flying through the air and landing on your city. That's actually what's driving reality right now. Like, that's reality. That's what you're actually contending with. You can talk about the money. You can talk about you can talk about whatever you want. At the end of the day, if Iran's got missiles and a will to defend itself, you got to deal with them. That's just how it is. So that's the reality that we're currently trying to deal with. And I don't want to spend too much time on any of this, since there really isn't anything substantial to hang our hat on. There's been a bunch of back and forth, kind of confusing nonsense with the Iranian delegation leaving, and actually they didn't leave. And actually, J.D. Vance says we have this understanding where they're only going to be able to spend that $300 billion on American foodstuffs. And Iran comes out and is like, what are you talking about? That was never a part of it. It's all a little bit confusing. So until we have something to actually sink our teeth into and a real substantial, tangible development here, it's all a lot of the same. Israel and Hezbollah apparently have agreed to a ceasefire starting on Friday. So we have that to look forward to. Israel and Hezbollah have agreed to a ceasefire beginning at 4 p.m. local time on Friday, a senior U.S. official told Reuters. Hezbollah and Israel have agreed to a ceasefire, the official said on background, adding that negotiators with the U.S. and Qataris worked out the deal with help from Iran. We understand that after the exchange of fire earlier today, Israel and Hezbollah are now in a ceasefire. Okay, amazing. What a ceasefire is, we still aren't entirely sure, since the one thing that we know is it's not when you cease firing, according to the people in charge. Now, the irony of all of this is that we've been through this before. And if you watched Moonbase Live last night, we spent basically the entire show just reiterating how point by point we are recreating the situation from 2006, more or less. And that in 2006, you had an attempted invasion of Lebanon by Israel. You had Hezbollah beating them back and it not working. And then what happened after that? What happened after Israel was forced to retreat after 33 days of a pointless but hugely damaging attempted invasion of Lebanon? We invented ISIS is what happened. Did you hear what I just said? See, they tried to invade Lebanon with Israel. America was on board with this. Condoleezza Rice was, you know, managing it. She, of course, just visited the White House a couple weeks ago. She wasn't there to talk about Iran. She was there to talk about the experience that the American government had overseeing and, you know, watching by as Israel, of course, completely failed to achieve this exact goal 20 years ago. Now, 20 years later, we're seeing exactly the same thing occur. Israel has made incursions into Lebanon, but it's not going well. They are losing a lot of men. They have not been able to substantially hamper Hezbollah at all, really, in their ability to release drones or launch rockets. I mean, the evidence that they're not doing well in Lebanon is the fact that an Israeli minister came out last week and said, we should bomb 10 buildings, and he actually said 100 buildings for every drone that Hezbollah shoots towards us. That's because they have no way of dealing with it. That's because they have no ability to stop the drones coming, so they are resorting to terror. They're resorting to, well, if we kill Lebanese people every time they launch a drone, then maybe the Lebanese people will stop Hezbollah from launching drones. That is such an outrageous act of desperation, such a ridiculous strategy for a genuine army to pursue. It's reflective of nothing other than their inability to think of anything else. Any other strategy would be better than terror bombing an attempt to sway the people against Hezbollah. But that's what they're doing because they have no other choice, because they can't stop the drones. They can't identify where they're coming from. They can't make a sizable dent. They're just blowing up crusader churches and castles out of frustration out of all of this. They say they're not removing themselves from the Beaufort crusader castle that they've taken over. But they also have been incapable of taking this one particular hill that is a Hezbollah fort that they've been trying to take. They've launched 8 different raids on this hill, and every single one of them has been beaten back. And as we were talking about this yesterday, it was like this has already happened really twice, with 2006 being the second time. If it happens a third time, if a third time Israel, with all of the support America gives it, with all of the incredible technology and power that they have, for a third time, they're embarrassed by Hezbollah, they have to retreat with their tail between their legs, maybe that's something they just cannot stomach. But the other side of me is like, well, they went through this once in 2006. I think they'll manage it again. I think they'll be okay after this. So what happened in 2006 after Israel failed? All of the sudden, what a coincidence, you had the outbreak of civil war in Syria. You had an attempt to shatter the axis of resistance by arming and funding radicals and separatists inside Syria to break away from Syria and from this moderate rebel group. You, of course, get the outgrowth of ISIS, which happens to appear at exactly the same locations where our CIA is training the rebels to fight the Syrian civil war. We created ISIS, and that's what Benghazi was all about. Like, this is the thing. you can actually study this stuff extensively and never realize that they're connected. You shouldn't. I mean, you should have the intelligence without even studying it to recognize how these things are interconnected. But part of what the media is engaged in is the deliberate presentation of this stuff as if it's separate. What happened in Libya, what happened with Benghazi, you know, that's a distinct and isolated incident. Meanwhile, and totally separately, you've got the Syrian civil war and the Arab Spring breaking out. And that's totally different and separate than this little kerfuffle that Israel had with Hezbollah. They want you to think of these things as distinct, separate, isolated incidents. When you understand that there is one war that's been waged for the last 30 plus years against Hezbollah, against all of Israel's neighbor, by Israel, using America as the golem carrying out this attack, you realize none of this is, it's literally all different fronts, different developments in exactly the same conflict. So we took out Muammar Gaddafi in part to open up the floodgates into Europe. Obviously, that was a pre-established, you know, strategy that they would be pursuing. And Gaddafi himself warned Europe, you destroy me, you open up the floodgates of Africa into Europe. That's exactly what happened. But yeah, they took out Gaddafi and then they wanted to use his state weapons and funnel them to the rebels in Syria. That's what the Benghazi raid was all about. That's why they covered it up and claimed it was about some video that was sent. And of course, the real thing to understand is what they were trying to get out of Benghazi were Stinger missiles that could take down potentially commercial airlines. So really the whole Benghazi thing was about getting weapons to ISIS, likely not so that they could be better armed against the Syrian army, but almost certainly so they could try to take down a passenger jet or something equivalent in order to create the wider outrage for America getting into Syria in a full-fledged way, which, of course, was a major attempt during Trump's first administration when they tried desperately to get him directly involved in the Syrian civil war. And there was that very interesting 24-hour period where, for the first time in his entire political career, they were celebrating Donald Trump and saying what a wonderful president he was because they thought he had finally taken the bait and launched attacks against Syria. But of course, the way that he did it in a very controlled fashion. He warned Syria and Russia that it would be happening to minimize casualties. And it was all a big show that he put on for the benefit of the media pundits themselves, who, of course, were salivating and thought he'd actually gone whole hog. And at the time, like, this is the type of thing that you can watch. You could watch InfoWars at the time. You can watch the Alex Jones Network. You can see we didn't come out and make excuses, say, well, you know, we didn't think, but, you know, Trump is right. We should be going to war with Syria. We didn't fall for it. When he launched the attacks, we said, damn it, you were supposed to be the chosen one. There's video. Alex Jones actually starts crying during it because it was like, this is the greatest betrayal ever. The Iran war was actually the betrayal. Like, that reality didn't come about for another couple of years. But at the time, it was like, what the hell are you doing, Trump? Why would you fall for this? Why would you get into this? Don't you understand they're trying to set you up for another forever war in the Middle East? But then it came out that he'd actually orchestrated it fairly well. He'd basically given the people what they wanted, which was attacking Syria, but in a way that guaranteed it wouldn't spiral out further. And so, again, you can see our reaction in real time as we go, damn it, this is bad. This shouldn't have happened. And then go, okay, all right, it looked like he managed it well. Is better than we thought it was going to be. Like, that's the natural reaction to have to all of this. You can look at us, and then you can look at other people who, no matter what Trump does, they're going to celebrate it and say it's the most genius thing ever. And whether it's, you know, they don't have any actual anything. No, they have no principles. They have no, you know, real moral conviction. It's just wherever the wind blows, we're not like that. We're going to tell you the truth no matter what. And in this case, Donald Trump seems to be doing what he can to minimize Israel without actively making enemies of them. But I think we may be past that. I think it may be time to actively make enemies of them. That'd be one way to handle it. Let's go to, so I got a bunch more videos I want to get to here in this couple of minutes. And weirdly, I'm almost tempted to show you a video of Hillary Clinton commenting on all of this, because she actually seems to have a better grasp than a lot of people in the Trump administration who just seem to be lying quite a bit. Let's go to clip 34 here. Clip 35. Let's go to clip 35, because this is J.D. Vance talking about the $300 billion funds being released. Now, as we just heard from Parsi there, You know, this is not a giveaway. It's their money, and it's in return for them doing things that we wanted them to do, which is why we implemented the sanctions in the first place. But then J.D. Vance makes a comment that makes me question all of it, basically. Here it is.
I've seen some misreporting about frozen or unfrozen Iranian assets. One of the other things that we wanted to do, and you know, wasn't as high of a priority for us for obvious reasons, but we wanted to make sure that we set up a process where if we ever unfreeze Iranian assets, we can ensure that that money, that Iranian money, goes to help the people of Iran and not to fund terrorism. So Jared Kushner actually came up with a very interesting solution with the Qataris, where basically, again, if there is any frozen Iranian assets that are unfrozen, then we have approval over that process, the Qataris have approval over that process, and then the money would actually go to buy American soy, American corn, and American wheat for the benefit of the Iranian people. And as much as I see some of the press misreporting on this, and of course, you know, buttressed by what the Iranians are saying, or not all Iranians, I want to be clear, there are a lot of Iranians who are telling the truth about what happened yesterday, but you see some social media reporting that gets this wrong. But fundamentally, what Jared and the Qataris and the entire team here in Bergenstock accomplished is, to me, a classic Trump deal, where if Iranian assets are ever unfrozen, they're going to go to make American farmers richer and to feed the Iranian people.
So Kushner came up with it? Sorry, the only thing I took away from that was that this was Jared Kushner's plan, which means I'm suspicious of it. Because, again, you look back at, well, interviews with Steve Witkoff, where he references the fact that Jared Kushner and he had been preparing to, you know, establish the Gaza Board of Peace to rule over the ruined Gaza for a year before October 7th even happened. It was a little bit of a slip up. So you got to wonder. I mean, obviously, Jared Kushner is a big key player in all of this. And you got to wonder why he's the one putting forward this $300 billion agreement deal. And of course, it was immediately after that speech where I go, okay, that kind of makes sense, though. I mean, if you think about it, okay, we're going to free up this money, but we can sort of dictate where they spend it, and they have to spend it on us. It's better than nothing. Sure, it'd be a $300 billion injection into our economy over time, and it helps rebuild Iran. I see a win-win situation here. Then you have the headline, Tehran disputes Vance claim on nuclear inspections and assets for agricultural funding amid oil license deal. So, is that even true? I don't even know. I cannot tell. I trust J.D. Vance typically, but he could be wrong in this. I mean, this is the thing. This is what it's like trying to cover this. Where you get a statement from the Vice President of the United States, no uncertain terms, here's the agreement we made, and then immediately after that, you get an article from Iran going, none of that is happening. Okay, great. So what do we do with this information? What is actually happening? I guess we'll wait and see. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. But yeah, Tehran disputes Vance claim. Unfreezing assets, divergence in official rhetoric. It's not true that Iran's blocked funds will be used to buy grain, and it is not mentioned in any understanding. Vance said Iran agreed to admit nuclear inspectors, but Iran's state media denied such an agreement was reached. The U.S. issued a 60-day license allowing Iranian oil production and sales as part of the continuing negotiation framework. That, at least, they both seem to agree on. But negotiations continue as we depart Switzerland, and everybody's trying to blame J.D. Vance for this when really it was your fault for getting in the war in the first place. Stay with us. 60 seconds.
There are billions of ways for people to be culturally, spiritually, politically, environmentally engaged. And there are millions and millions of different programs and podcasts and radio shows and things around the world out of the 10 million people on this planet. But on the record, what we've done at InfoWars, and this is just the second leg of that at alexjoneslive.com, has changed the world. Our guests, our callers, our researchers, our reporters, and my overall futuristic analysis and view of the destiny of humanity, which I don't claim to be 100% accurate, but it's definitely proven to be a good template to observe the world, has had a giant effect, and the globalists do not like it. So when you share that local AM and FM station that you listen to and tell those you share it with to share it, it changes the world. when you say this is forbidden information at alexjoneslive.com, that has the free audio and video feeds and archives and shows and articles, you are literally going in the face of the censors and the tyrants. You're changing the world. It seems simple. It seems little, but it's not, because we have millions of listeners and viewers. And if we can leverage that out to millions more and have them leverage it out, that creates the chain reaction. And all the great guests and hosts we've had on over the years who were already great, successful, they'll tell you how much more their shows blew up once they were on air here with this operation. We are here to get the next generation, black, white, old, young, to awaken to the epic time that we're all alive in right now and take action. So your word of mouth is key, your prayer for the broadcast is key, and supporting us financially is so key. And we make it symbiotic, where everything you get at thealexjonesstore.com will empower you, will enrich you, and will be an adventure. The Patriot Apparel, some of the best designs ever, limited edition for the 250th anniversary of the United States of America, are out right now. Right now, ladies and gentlemen. And this latest design, these limited edition, America, red, white, and blue on, you know, Sterling Royal Blue, 76, America 76, 250 years. That is a really cool shirt. I think it's going to be a bestseller. It just came out today. And all the other 250th anniversary limited edition shirts are available right now as well at thealexjonesstore.com. So be sure and check those out. And I thank you for your support. But wearing these out in public, meeting like-minded people, spreading the word, it's an adventure in and of itself, and it funds this operation, which is exposing the next pandemic, the next attempted lockdowns, the next big globalist war. You are financing your own future for a better future and better destiny when you keep this broadcast on the air. But you can also experience the info war on the ground wearing these great shirts. Also, we have the new dual carbon platinum gravity-fed filter, the highest quality gravity-fed carbon filters that are the highest rated, cutting out all of the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of horrible forever chemicals that are out there. And it has the highest quality stainless steel. Nobody has got a filter with better filtration. It's the highest rated, and nobody has as beautiful a filter as this. And ours is way under the price of competitors that are crap. This is the best. It's a home run by Bigley, our sponsor. We're so proud of it. Here's the issue. 1,000 of these came in. It sold out in 3 days. They got a couple thousand more coming in like late next week. Those are pre-order right now. They're going to be sold out soon. And then I'm going to stop promoting it until they get even more in, because I don't like doing pre-order. But if you want to be at the head of the line to get these while you still can, and not have to wait a month or so after that, get your order in now, right now, at thealexjonesstore.com. And while you're on the site, check out all the other great Patriot apparel, the super high quality military grade belts, all the great supplements and more at thealexjonesstore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, alexjoneslive.com is tomorrow's news today.
All right, welcome back, folks. You know, I have so much more when it comes to Israel. I mean, things are so crazy with that country. It's hard not to spend every show on it. It like the entire show. But I got a lot of other stuff that I want to get to. I'm debating whether we should continue to talk about this, because it's stuff like this. Vance, quote, legitimately worried, Situation Room tapes given to the New York Times. Vice President Vance said on Wednesday he's legitimately worried about audio tapes of conversations from the Situation Room being leaked to journalists in the New York Times. His comments come after a recent report alleged that Vance led the administration's response to fallout from the release of files tied to the disgraced financier Jeffrey Epstein. A separate report from the Times detailed President Trump's discussions in a series of meetings inside the Situation Room pertaining to U.S. strategy throughout the Iran war. Yeah, that's extremely concerning, that they're leaking Situation Room tapes. Who else are they leaking them? Who else is listening into them? I think we might have a subversion, an infiltration and subversion issue here, when it appears as though the White House itself is infiltrated by people that are more loyal to Israel than they are to America and are willing to commit treason, knowing that they won't ever be punished for it, even though, I mean, how many people even have access to the Situation Room tapes? It doesn't seem like it'd be that hard to run down who leaked this, but that investigation will likely never happen or certainly never come to fruition, because it's almost certainly because a, you know, Israeli spy is in the White House. Last time they discovered an Israeli spy in the White House, he was made the ambassador to the UN. So, you know, that type of stuff doesn't really get punished that much. Mike Waltz, of course, was caught communicating with Netanyahu outside of his official role as an American member of the government. He was communicating with and giving tips to and conspiring with a foreign power and giving them advice on how to have the upper hand in negotiations with our president. See, I consider that treason. I don't know what else it would be. Can't imagine what else it would be. It also seems to hint that Mike Waltz could be implicated even more in the Signalgate scandals, and it's probably not the first time he's done this, communicated with foreign nations or, you know, foreign loyal media outlets to try to destroy America's ability to act with our conscience because he believes in Israel and is loyal to Netanyahu. So, like, this is the thing, you know. It's not like they don't know that our White House is infiltrated. It's not like they're confused at this. They're unaware of the fact that Israel routinely spies on our highest levels of government for their own ends and in opposition to our benefit. Are we going to do anything about it? Is anything going to happen? Probably not. So that's how bad the problem is. That's because that's how bad the problem is. You understand? So Vance is legitimately worried about the fact that, yes, some sort of Israeli infiltrator has trying to destroy peace by leaking conversations with the president inside the Situation Room. Then you have stories like this. Israel has seized more land from neighbors since 2023 than it has in decades. Over the past 2.5 years, Israel has taken control of huge swaths of Gaza, Lebanon, and Syria. It amounts to its biggest expansion of military-occupied lands in decades. It's an area larger than many major cities, roughly 1,000 square kilometers. That's 386 square miles. And Israel has said it plans to stay indefinitely. So going back, I'm not even sure I finished my thought in that last segment. But essentially, if you look at what happened in 2006 and you see that when Israel failed to invade Lebanon, the next resort was to get ISIS involved. Well, we're seeing exactly the same thing occur here, where Trump wants al-Shara, al-Jolani, the leader, the former ISIS head chopper, who's now president of Syria. He wants him to invade Lebanon from the north. They'll likely have as much success as, well, Israel's having in the south, or ISIS had in the north. And again, we did this on Moonbase, but if you weren't there, you can actually watch the battle maps, right? People make time-lapse animations that show exactly where forces are, where they're moving, where attacks happen. And if you look at the one for the Syrian Civil War, or the time period from about 2006 to about 2015 or so, you can see that the rebel groups of Syria, they first crop up directly on the northern border of Lebanon and were there the entire time trying to go into Lebanon. If you look at the history of ISIS, it's pretty obvious that ISIS likely would have taken control of Syria, would have had a lot more success, and would have probably never been defeated if it weren't for thousands of Hezbollah militiamen going into Syria to fight them. It's the same thing over and over again. So what's going to happen from this juncture, you know, here on out? Likely Israel is not going to do much more in terms of taking over Lebanon or anything else of the sort. Yeah, here you can see the time lapse. And again, that little orange country is Lebanon, sort of surrounded on almost all sides by Syria. And you can see the little pockets of, well, you know, sometimes they're Syrian rebel groups. Sometimes they're ISIS. Sometimes it's kind of hard to tell the difference. And I'm not sure if it's this map or another one, but there are ones you can see where they'll have Hezbollah, you know, noted as to what actions they're doing. And you can see they form sort of a protective shield around Lebanon. I mean, that's the purpose of them. That's what they typically do. Anyway, that's going to happen again. So again, they're going to try to get Jolani or al-Shara to invade if they think that'll work, which I don't think it will, but it might lessen the pressure on the South, so maybe Israel could have some more success. All of this is contingent on the outcome of the negotiations with Iran, obviously, and whether America can actually wield the overwhelming leverage we should have with Israel to get them to stop being so belligerent. It all depends on that. But regardless, it's like Israel is setting itself up for total failure and total collapse, maybe 10 years in the future when their support has reached a minimum and people are getting elected to American politics that are running likely on the sole policy of let's stop supporting Israel. Like, that's going to start happening here in America, and they're going to be screwed. They're going to be completely out of luck. So they have sort of a ticking time bomb with an uncertain explosion date sometime in the future that the fuse is lit. It's going to explode. That's just a fact. They want to take out Iran before that time period. That's probably not going to happen, but they're still going to solidify the gains that they've made so far. They're still going to annex the West Bank. They're still going to create a militarized buffer zone around Gaza and continue to squeeze that population until they can get their Gaza rebuilding Board of Peace project move forward. They have no intention of returning any land to Lebanon whatsoever, or, you know, stopping the attempt to take over all of Lebanon, as Ben-Gvir very eloquently stated. But they are going to solidify their gains in the Golan Heights. They'll solidify their gains possibly up to the Litani River, but maybe not. Either way, they're not retreating. They're not falling back. You know, even as I say this, you know, maybe this is a situation like Germany in World War I, where if you were watching the battle maps of World War I, no foreign forces ever stepped on German soil. Germany expanded during World War I just about everywhere it tried, and nobody ever actually invaded Germany. Everybody was on the defensive the whole time. But then when it came time to sign the Treaty of Versailles, they lost all of those territorial gains and more, and were left significantly diminished as a consequence of that treaty. Maybe something like that will happen with Israel, where, yeah, they're gaining land, yeah, they're conquering places or taking ownership of places that are still to this day and always previously had been denoted by the UN to be, you know, an illegal international occupation. They're basically annexing those areas. Israel thinks in terms of generations. They don't necessarily plan for what's going to happen, you know, a year later. America, we're constantly stuck in the cycle of what's going to get us to the next election, what's going to get us to the next quarter, how do we just improve this stat immediately so that we can, you know, weather this particular storm. For the Israelis, it's like, well, they got the expansion that they wanted in certain places. Maybe they didn't get Iran, but, you know, I think they're feeling pretty confident in their ability to sort of never contract, but, you know, calm down a little bit. After all, again, we saw this before. It took them 20 years to build up goodwill and, you know, confidence to try this again. It may be another 20 years before we see another big explosion of conflict in the Middle East, but certainly in the term of a century-long timetable, Israel has made some major tangible developments and expansions in just this little, you know, conflict here. In fact, I think I have some good videos about this, but I got so much other stuff to cover. Marjorie Taylor Greene wrote this: our strategic petroleum reserves are historically low, sitting at approximately 340 million barrels. Our strategic petroleum reserve has not been this low since 1983. The U.S. uses between 20 to 23 million barrels of oil per day. Our SPR is extremely low because Trump released 172 million barrels of oil because of his Iran war, and Biden released 180 million barrels of oil in 2022 because of the Ukraine-Russia war. If America has so much oil, why are Americans paying the price of wars we don't support? Because it's all for Israel, obviously. So Israel is having some success in terms of territorial expansion. It's just at what cost is the question. Mark Levin flying to Israel as Netanyahu reportedly seeks to leverage Levin to trash Trump's Iran deal. And of course, there's, you know, all these headlines about how, you know, Netanyahu is just clearly going to try to scuttle and destroy any diplomatic ability Trump has to negotiate with Iran. And Netanyahu himself comes out I got a video of him thanking Mark Levin by name, as well as other American patriots that are doing his job to try to convince Trump to stay in the war. Again, these people are all just traitors. It's not nothing really that complicated about it. A renowned Lebanese sea turtle conservationist was killed by the IDF in an attack near Tyre. Mona Khalil was a 76-year-old Lebanese environmental activist and sea turtle conservationist. She died over the weekend from wounds sustained in an Israeli strike on her home 2 weeks ago in southern Lebanon near the city of Tyre, according to environmental activists and media reports. One of Khalil's assistants was also seriously wounded in the attack. The IDF said it had no record of an attack at the coordinates provided on June 5th, the day Khalil was wounded. The IDF always acts in accordance with international law and works to minimize harm to uninvolved individuals, it says. Again, I don't even know why. Why do you feel the need to publish such hilarious lies? That's crazy. That's a crazy thing to say. Al Jazeera reported that Khalil came from a Lebanese family that had once lived in Nigeria. She was born in 1949, lived for many years in the Netherlands, and returned to Lebanon to live in a house that her family owned next to the Al Mansouri beach south of Tyre. So again, you know, it's like, how do people justify this in terms of the lies that Israel says about, oh, we're killing Hamas or we're killing Hezbollah, and where we work so hard to minimize civilian casualties? And it's like, really? Because you've killed hundreds of aid workers, and God only knows how many. I mean, I've seen probably hundreds of memorials to, like, the Christian priest and his family slaughtered by Israel, churches destroyed. In fact, there's video we have of Israel desecrating another church in southern Lebanon, clip 28 here. After all, one of their first incursions into Lebanon this round, you know, they smashed the statue of the Virgin Mary, and it was very embarrassing for Israel, since they're at the same time trying to convince everybody that Israel is a good place for Christians. Well, here you can see the IDF got into this church and smashed all of the statues because, you know, they're driven by hatred of Christianity just as much as hatred of Islam. So again, how do Americans justify this? How do Americans, you know, believe that Israel is the champion of the Christians, but occasionally desecrate churches whenever they get a chance and blew up the Crusader fort that had been there for 1400 years, saying they're so careful not to kill any civilians, but it's like every civilian in Lebanon is being murdered? How do you justify this? You can't. I mean, you just have to believe lies. That's the only possible way. Israel and defense experts says America needs another Pearl Harbor or 9/11 to remember who's the enemy and who's the friend. I don't think that's going to convince anybody. Dude, I think it's a whole different world than it was 26 years ago when they did 9/11 for exactly the same reason, with exactly the same purpose. I don't think anybody's going to buy it. And at this point, I mean, I understand, you know, the low IQ anti-Semitism stuff can be very damaging to an actual genuine attempt to stop the evil in the world, regardless of who it's coming from or where it's coming from. I understand why you'd not want to be making claims like this without sufficient proof, but we have more than enough proof for how Israel was involved in the attacks on 9/11. I just don't think this is going to work. In a word, I don't think this is going to work. I've said before, I think the only thing that could possibly work would be an attack of such monumental and devastating scale that, like, it literally just terrifies absolutely everybody into obeying because they think they're going to die if they don't. Like, something of that level. If you have nukes going off in multiple cities around the country all in the same day, everybody's just going to fall into line. Like, at that point, something of that scale. But even then, I think people are going to be like, damn it, this is Israel. And again, you know, there were several instances over this weekend of churches burning. One in New York, there was one in, or actually, I wasn't sure. I think maybe the same one was mislabeled. Somebody said it was New Brunswick, a church in New Brunswick, but I think it was Bushwick Avenue. There's a church on Bushwick Avenue in New York that burned. And the top comment I saw underneath it was, "This is Israel. It looks like Mossad has really upped its attacks." I don't think that was Mossad. I genuinely don't. I think most of the church burnings that we see at an ever-increasing rate are the consequence of purposeful arson attacks from people on the left, from Islamists mostly, because since most of them are happening in Europe, it could be a Jewish radical that did this. But like, that's the mindset of a lot of Americans right now is, oh, something bad happened. Israel's at it again. Again, I don't think that's necessarily a healthy way to approach things, because you're just discrediting the actual claims you have if you just claim every fire ever set in America must be Mossad pulling off a false flag. Like, that's very low IQ anti-Semitism. That's not helpful to anybody. But it is a litmus test. But it is a little bit of a sign of the times and what people are thinking and where they're placing their outrage. You know, it's kind of like the Charlie Kirk assassination. I always said from the very beginning, I don't know what, if any, role Israel had in the Charlie Kirk assassination, but there's really only one of two options. Either I accidentally foiled a Israeli false flag by simply, you know, posting a rumor I'd heard a couple weeks before the assassination actually occurred. Like, either it was Israel and they didn't even get close to getting away with it, we caught them, you know, red-handed, pants down, the moment it happened. Or maybe Israel got blamed for the one assassination they didn't actually carry out. I don't know which one it is, and I'm kind of fine with either. So it's kind of like, okay, I don't think Israel necessarily burned that church, but I'm also not entirely unhappy with them getting the blame. It's also not the worst people to blame, since there's a pattern of behavior there. But again, I don't know if a 9/11 or a Pearl Harbor attack would work when at least half the country literally blames you for everything when there's not any evidence. I think by talking about it, by going, you know, America needs another 9/11, America needs another Pearl Harbor, it's like, do you know what you're doing? All you're doing by making this statement is stacking up the evidence for the eventual attack that everybody is going to assume Israel carried out, because, you know, you keep talking about it. You keep saying that you're going to do it, or that somebody should do it, or you're just predicting that it's going to happen. Yeah, I think we know the unspoken here. Israel's ambassador Mike Huckabee said he feels safer in Tel Aviv than the USA. Jokes he checked Trump's Truth Social to see if he'd been fired amid the Netanyahu beef. Very funny. Very funny stuff from Mike Huckabee. Crazy. And I want to read this because I think this is very true, and this goes into everything that we're talking about. Well, before I do that, here's another example of what I consider a pretty pretty crazy watershed moment. I actually covered it on my off-limits news show more, although I guess I covered it on War Room as well. It's the whole story that happened last week with Joe Lonsdale and this kid who said, "I don't want to work for Jews," and Gabe Einhorn. The Gateway Pundit, typically when it comes to American politics, is one of my favorite outlets. And for a very long time, before October 7th, it was very much my go-to. In the morning, I'd open Infowars.com. Now I open AlexJonesLive.com, open Gateway Pundit. But it's one of these things where they can be right about 99% of everything, and then anytime Israel gets mentioned, they just are just abjectly wrong. It's one of these situations, one of these instances, where it's like, this can't be natural, because they so clearly can see the truth with everything, but then when it's Israel, they just buy every lie, hook, line, and sinker. And it's like kind of embarrassing. It's like, you can see through the deep state. You can see through the manipulations that have attacked America for so long. You can see through all of that, but you still think Hamas beheaded 40 babies. Like, it's crazy. It's crazy. Gateway Pundit is one of these articles. So imagine my shock when there was a headline called "Tech Demigods Target a Teenager. Is this MAGA now? Is this MAGA now?" Be a strong Jew, he commanded the 24-year-old founder. And that is the missed opportunity. A Cornell student turned down a job interview with an ignorant and stupid line about not wanting to work for a Jewish founder. Nobody has to defend it. The kid is not the story. The opportunity is the story. The founder, Gabe Einhorn, blacked out the student's name before posting it. Then billionaire Joe Lonsdale, Peter Thiel's partner and one of the world's most powerful men, stepped in and told him he was weak for not naming the kid. So the fact that Gateway Pundit is explicitly calling out the behavior of the Jewish elite in their very ill-advised attack on American freedoms. Again, I don't think you have the domination that you think you do. I don't think Israel can get away with what it thinks it can get away with. And so when it comes to, you know, the panic that Israel is feeling right now, as their gamble is not paid off, as the war they started has turned on them, and now they're calling out to the Jewish diaspora, and specifically Jews here in America, to turn on America and join them in their attempt to destroy America and to make off with our wealth to the Middle East, as laid out in the video that we showed earlier. I think this is a fantastic summation of all this. Hopefully I can get through it before the break ends. This is from JD at Lost My Hats on X. He says, so what you see in the latest clip of Prime Minister Netanyahu is him telling Jews to fight their own government, their own country, their own neighbors on behalf of a foreign nation to whom he candidly tells them they owe their greatest loyalty. The entire Zionist project was permitted by Western nations because we were told Jews needed a safe space, a sanctuary where they could be safe. Western nations bought into the Zionist project because they were sick and tired of Jewish people causing civil unrest as Jewish values conflicted with Western Christian values, and permitted their own body politic could finally relieve the West of that clash of cultures. 80 years later, and Israel is the least safe place for Jews on earth. 80 years later, Jews are still being told to assert their will over the will of their host countries and to fight their neighbors. 80 years later, and Jews still refuse to go live in Israel, supposedly their ancestral homeland, where they have deep metaphysical connections, and instead remain spread worldwide instead of going to live in the homeland that's so important to their identity. If anti-Semitism is such a problem worldwide, why hasn't the diaspora moved to their sanctuary nation yet? Why fight anti-Semitism when you can just migrate to a safe space? It's because Israel was never what they told us it was for. Israel is a power-laundering international outpost that allows them to maintain state-sponsored violence, a base of operations for sanction-free rulemaking, a place where criminals can escape extradition, and the diaspora serves as a native lobbying operation for the benefit of the Israeli state. Again, we're going to continue through this, but I genuinely hope Jews in America can see through how the powers that be are trying to use them to create the division and the strife and the chaos that serves only them.
Folks, I'm Dr. Bigley. Today's presentation will be about methylene blue and you.
Dr. Bigley, what does methylene blue do?
Great question, Billy. It has to do with your mitochondria, the powerhouse of your cells. Let's bring out the mitochondria now!
Right.
As I was saying, methylene blue supercharges your mitochondria, which does wonders for your mental clarity, stamina, and overall pep. Just look at him go!
Gee, Dr. Bigley, he must have drank a lot of methylene blue. He was bouncing off the walls.
Right you are, Billy. He sure drank a lot. Let's continue, shall we?
Billy, did you know that methylene blue can cure communism?
No, sir. Can I see?
Why, certainly, Billy. Take a look over there.
Behold, Ivan, a Ruski doggedly determined to undermine our way of life. Careful, Billy. He bites. Oh. Look. Vodka. Potato hooch. Watch. The communism is slowly leaving his body.
Wow. The methylene blue cured the red right out of him.
So, how do you feel?
Gee, Doc. I don't know what got into me. I feel like $1 million now. Say, where can I get some more of that blue stuff in case I become retarded again?
You can find it on the alexjonesstore.com.
What does .com mean?
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, alexjoneslive.com is tomorrow's news today.